Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Dr. John Dvorak as we talk about his work, earthquake storms, telescopes, space, and all that next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Dr. John Dvorak with us, of course, and your phone calls as well. Earthquake storms, John, for people who want to pick up the book, where can they find it?
Well, they can certainly pick it up at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And it's available in many bookstores in California, including at Costco.
Super. If you lived in an area that is earthquake-prone, what would you be doing right now?
What would I be doing right now? I'd be living the normal life. I would have made sure that things were prepared, which even if you're not in an earthquake-prone area, you should always have some water in your house, you should always have some food, and you should always have a radio and batteries, so forth, just for any type of emergency.
Yeah, I think you have to do that. You never know when something is going to happen.
That's right, whether it's an earthquake or a tornado or a flood or a hurricane.
Out in the Hawaii area where you live, do you live near Hilo?
I live about 10 miles outside of Hilo, out in the forest.
Do you get many power outages there or anything, John?
Yes, we do. That's part of the daily life on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Well, sure is. Okay, let's go to the phones right now. We'll go to Diane in Gig Harbor, Washington, to get things started. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi,
there. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I was wondering, I'm living up by Seattle, and I was wondering a couple things. They predicted earthquakes back in October last year, and actually we did have a small one down on the peninsula, but are they going to have any more that they see coming in the near future? And I had a comment. One night I was going to ask a second question. Was I saw something that went by in the sky at a really downward angle that looked like a big blue ball with a slight tail to it, and would something like that land on land or water? Would it make a big impact if you saw something like that just off the horizon?
I think that was probably a meteorite that, over Russia, they had an explosion. It blew up in the atmosphere. In this particular case, you were looking at something way, way up there. And they say it's about, John, these meteors that we see shooting through the sky, some of them are no bigger than a grain of sand.
Yes, that's right. Almost all the meteors you see, they're actually debris off of comets, and most of them are little pieces of ice, and they're about the size of a grain of sand.
Now, are some of them any bigger?
Oh, certainly. If you set out there, you'll see some of them break up. And some will be very bright, and at that point, people start calling them fireballs. And they are, of course, much bigger than a grain of sand. They might be sort of the size of your fist.
Let's go to Richard in Las Vegas, Nevada, west of the Rockies. Richard, go ahead.
Hi, George. Great show as usual.
Thanks,
thank
Richard.
You for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I have one question. And it evolves around blind thrust faults versus slip faults and the damage that could be caused by either of the two. And I realize that the guest is not a structural engineer, but from a perspective of a researcher into earthquakes, I'd like to know, and I've always wondered, how much more dangerous or less dangerous would the blind thrust fault be from the slip fault? I mean, we experience weightlessness in our earthquake, which was about 10 seconds or so thereabouts, but it really lasted over a minute with all the shaking going on. We were close to the mountains. I was in Northridge, and it permanently disabled me. So what is your opinion about that? I'll take the answer off the air. Thanks again, George. Good talking to you.
All right. Go ahead, John. Give us some of your thoughts.
Okay,
there.
Well,
you can certainly have major damage from either a strike slip fault like the San Andreas or a thrust fault, such as what happened in San Fernando 71 or Northridge in 92. It's a matter of how much of the land is actually moving. How big is the fracture and how much displacement? In essence, it depends on the magnitude of the earthquake. But both can certainly produce very damaging earthquakes.
Now, with these earthquakes and in terms of the damaging part of it, if you're walking around, right, in just the ground, not in a building, just walking around, and all of a sudden the rumble starts, what's it feel like? I've really never been in one. I've had little twos and 2.4s, but I mean, what's it feel like? I mean, like you've lost total control?
Well, on the largest earthquakes, yes. The acceleration will be over 1G, which means there will be times when you'll be having the equivalence of twice your weight, and then a second later, you'll be in pre-fall. And so some earthquakes are large enough to knock you off your feet. There's no doubt about that. A person from Chile told me a story when she was growing up. Remember, there was a large earthquake in 1960 down in Chile? It's still the largest one ever recorded by instruments. Well, when she was growing up, anytime the earth started to shake, she said all the adults would immediately lie down on the ground. And she didn't understand why until someone told her about this earthquake back in 1960. So there, people have had experience, and they know immediately you lie down on the ground because the earthquake could actually knock you off your feet.
Huh. Let's go to Cheryl in Fairmont, West Virginia. Hi, Cheryl. Thank you for calling. Welcome to the show.
Hi. My name's actually Carolyn. But I do have a question in reference to fracking. I'm living in an area where there's a lot of fracking going on in West Virginia, Ohio, up through Michigan, and in the Dakotas. And my question is, a lot of these men are saying that the fracking is very safe, although very close to a large fracking area in West Virginia, there has been an earthquake, very small one, but there was an earthquake. And that's rather unusual. And I was just wondering if the states that are being fracked in are actually rather close to the New Madrid Fault. I was wondering if the fracking would trigger a New Madrid earthquake and how big it would be if it did happen, and what would it do to the Great Lakes, and if they would actually do something like what Edgar Casey says, they would empty down through the Ohio River into the Mississippi.
Well, that, I think, would take a huge earthquake to do something. But, John, give me your thoughts. Fracking can cause what size earthquake, do you think?
Well, the fracking that's going on now is causing magnitude 3 and smaller earthquakes. Occasionally, they may be magnitude 4s. The question is whether, if you do enough fracking, could they produce damaging earthquakes, like 6s and above? And that is still very highly debated.
Now, and in terms of changing, the Great Lakes, we're talking about a major catastrophe here.
That would be something that has not happened in any recent geologic history at all.
Is it conceivable that California, as a landmass, could fall into the Pacific?
No, California is not going to fall into the Pacific. Tens of millions of years from now, what is California today will be a collection of islands that are moving out over the northern part of the Pacific. So what's happening right now is California is slowly getting torn apart. And what you see of California will eventually be up in the North Pacific where it's cold.
Let's go to Daniel, Wichita, Kansas. Hey, Daniel, go ahead. Thanks for calling, and you are on Coast to Coast.
Hi, George. Hi, John. I was wondering, this last caller kind of hit what I was going to ask. I live in south central Kansas, and immediately south of Wichita, Caldwell. That's been the closest, and that's about 20 miles north of the Oklahoma border. All through north central Oklahoma, you said you weren't aware of fracking. Where exactly they're fracking in the United States? They've been doing heavy fracking down there, and we've had a 4.2, and we've had 8 this last year. I'm almost 60 years old. I've never, ever experienced an earthquake in Kansas. And I've lived here and I've lived in Oklahoma. And especially around Kingfisher, Hooker, down to as far south as Tulsa, they're having these threes. I think the biggest was 2 months ago. It was a 4.2. I'm not aware that we're on any fault line, so I can't see that anything would be causing this other than fracking. What I was concerned about is my relation lives there, and they mostly live on water wells instead of city water. What can that do to their underground water as far as hydraulic fracturing of the underground earth?
And it could probably poison it, John, couldn't it?
That's right, because of the type of fluids that are going into the ground that can certainly contaminate groundwater. And again, because of the earthquakes, it's well established that fracking will produce magnitude 3s. It could produce up to 4s, but whether it can actually produce a damaging earthquake, that is still debated.
Why do they have to use these kind of fluids in fracking? Why don't they just use plain old water?
Well, the water you put the fluid down both to break the rock, but you also have to take the hydrocarbon that's in the shale. You have to make it into a liquid. And so water won't work. You have to put a chemical down. And the question is it possible to develop a chemical that will pull the oil out of the shale without contaminating water? And that's also being worked on.
All right, next up we have Ann in Kings Ford, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Ann, let's go with you. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Ann.
The people before me, especially the one in West Virginia, kind of took my question, but it's more in regards to Edgar Cayce. He had made a prediction, and they had it on a TV program years ago here, but that there was going to be this major earthquake that would, you know, along the Mississippi and right up through the Great Lakes, which is, you know, north of me, but it would actually be so great that it would split the continent, you know, into the United States would be separated.
That's got to be.
Would run right along the Mississippi. I mean, I just wondered if there was any evidence of that or any kind of concern, or if there was any, you know, if that's just right now just in a lore or something for now, because there's no evidence of that happening. Or
could there be an earthquake that big, John, that would split the continent?
No, there's certainly nothing in the recent geologic history to indicate that. We do have this pocket of earthquakes that occur down in New Madrid in the southeast part of Missouri. And those are persistent earthquakes. And as we talked earlier, there have been large quakes there. But there's nothing in the geologic record to even hint of a big fracture in the continent.
What's the highest number you can get on the Richter scale, John?
Well, as Richter would often say, there is no limit to my scale. It depends on the way the Earth behaves. And the largest one on record is the one in Chile in 1960, and that's a 9.5.
Wow.
That must have been like 800 miles long, the fracture, and it was probably 30, 40 miles wide. And so that's probably the largest. Now, curiously, some stars have larger quakes than that. You know, on a neutron star, those have quakes occasionally. And if you want to extend the Richter magnitude scale to that, those are like magnitude 23s or 25s. I mean, those are gigantic quakes.
Huge. How do we know they have quakes? How do we measure that?
Oh, what we measure is the spin of the neutron star.
Okay.
And occasionally there's a little jump in the spin rate. And that's probably because there was something like a quake on the surface of the star.
Can there ever be an earthquake so big that it changes the tilt of the planet?
Not by a huge amount. Large earthquakes like Chile 1960, Sumatra 2004, Tohoku in Japan 2011, those all shifted the spin axis of the Earth. I forget by how much. I think Tohoku moved it a foot or so. So it will change, and of course the reason it changes is because the moment of inertia of the planet changes. The way that the mass is distributed on the planet has moved, and so to conserve momentum, the spin rate of the planet changes, and also the location of the spin axis. But it's down to something like feet for big earthquakes.
I've always wondered if there was a crack on the ocean floor, almost like, you know, a sink, if the water would run through it and literally empty the ocean. Is that conceivable?
No. No, the water wouldn't, there isn't any place for it to drain into, because down below the solid floor of the ocean, the rest of the Earth is solid right there.
All the way down.
There is a crack, and it's known as the Mid-Ocean Ridge, and it's the longest single feature on the planet. It's about 25,000 miles long, and it's where the oceans are spreading open, and it's where the new floor of the ocean is being created. For example, it runs down the center of the Atlantic right through Iceland.
Yeah.
That's part of the Mid-Ocean Ridge. And many people refer to that as a crack. It sort of runs around the Earth like the seam does on a baseball.
Have we ever witnessed through submarines underwater earthquakes?
We haven't seen things happening at the floor of the ocean for earthquakes, but we have seen eruptions going on the floor of the ocean. There's a very famous one that was filmed off the coast of Oregon some 5 to 10 years ago. And then people look at the new Hawaiian island, the one that's just southeast of the big island that's growing, and though no one has seen it erupt, people have seen brand new flows of lava. They go down one year, and they see what the volcano looks like, and they go down in a submersible a couple years later, and there's some new lava right there.
And it changes. John, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, as I mentioned, our next Coast to Coast program, David Weatherly joins us as we talk about the black-eyed children and also strange intruders. It's going to be one of those classic Coast to Coast nights. Make sure you're part of that program. Welcome back to Coast. John Dvorak with us, of course. There is, from the Pacific time, John, there's a two-hour time difference, right, back in Hawaii?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, well, that's not bad. And I think we've got the old daylight saving time switch coming up Saturday night into Sunday morning. It takes effect Sunday at 2 a.m. Do you switch in Hawaii?
No, Hawaii stays the same all year round.
All right, very good. And we'll get a little bit more of daylight, as they say, here. Now, do you go to any special earthquake meetings or seminars where other seismologists and experts get together?
Years ago I did, but I haven't recently. Ever since I've started operating the telescope, I haven't worked on the research of earthquakes.
How much time does it take?
Certainly long ago I did.
Does a telescope take up a lot of time now for you?
Oh, yes. It's my full-time job.
Yeah, but you love it, don't you?
It's one of the great jobs of the world.
It sure is. And do you, you know, when people tour the place, do you let them look through the telescope?
No, actually, it's very rare that anyone actually looks through the scope. Almost everything comes up on computer screens. But about once a year, we put an eyepiece on it, and various people come up, and you can actually look through the eyepiece and see Saturn and some other objects in the sky.
All right, let's go to Lynette in Warsaw, Kentucky. Hey, Lynette, it's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Hello.
Hi.
I was thinking, let's say that, you know, Bowling Green and the sinking Corvette, and how close is that to Carbon? You know, they had an earthquake one Saturday. Maybe Bowling Green Museum is sitting on an earthquake.
Well, you know, that's a good question. That's a sinkhole. What do you think sinkholes are, John?
Well, the best that I can understand sinkholes is that groundwater has dissolved the limestone. And so it's lost the structure. It's lost all of its support, and the ground just collapses right there.
That's what I thought. It has nothing to do with an earthquake, does it?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with an earthquake.
And can you readily fill those holes back up again with stone, gravel, and dirt, and it'll be fine, or is it gone?
Well, if groundwater dissolved it once, you can fill it up again. It will probably dissolve it a second time. And so this is wherever there are sinkholes, even if you try to repair them, you'll probably get some more holes.
And how come it happened? I mean, you know, this is land that could have been there for, you know, 4.5 billion years, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's gone. What happened to it?
Well, it has something to do with the groundwater, with the pattern of the flow of the groundwater.
It changes, does it? It's got to change.
That's right. There's a variety of reasons that the groundwater flow may have changed.
Next up, let's go to Larry in Saskatchewan, Canada. Hi, Larry. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George and John.
Hey.
I was just wanting to say that we had the pleasure of going to Mauna Kea in Hawaii in January, and it was very awesome. Like, we didn't get up to the top because we didn't have a 4x4, but we got to get to about the 9,000-foot level, and they set up telescopes all on the patio there, and we could see the rings around Saturn and Jupiter's moons and...
Nothing like it.
And just before the sunset, we could they put a telescope up with a filter on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you could see the sunspots, and it was just awesome.
Yes, it is intriguing. Every night from 7 to 10 o'clock at this 9,000-foot elevation, there's a whole range of scopes come out for the public to view. And that's every night of the year.
I guess at the top of Mauna Kea, there is no city lights around.
That's right. It's as dark can be up there. And, of course, what you experience up there, if it's clear and moonless, you get a very good indication of the sky glow. You know, the sky actually glows at night.
That's
if
right.
If you have an overcast clouds, it gets very, very dark. And it's amazing how bright the sky actually glows, the night sky.
I was in Joshua Tree last year at an event called Contact in the Desert, and there were no city lights there. And it's been a long time, John, that I've looked at stars without city lights all around. I mean, it is unbelievable how many stars there are up there. Unbelievable. And that's only just a little scratch.
Oh, well, you're right. I mean, it is magnificent. And then you can see the Milky Way and the dark lanes of the Milky Way on nights like that.
We have next Victor, truck driving in Sacramento. Hey, west of the Rockies. Victor, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. John, I've got a question. If All right. you were at the top of the mountain looking through your telescope and you have an absolute smoking gun that you absolutely see a different life out there, what's your protocol after that?
You mean like a craft out there, Victor, or something?
A planet or a craft, anything that would be an absolute smoking gun that there is life other than on our planet. What would be John's protocol? Who would he talk to after sighting and discovering something like that?
Okay. All right. John, if you saw, and I'm going to paraphrase what he wants. If you saw something through the telescope that was just mind-boggling and earth-shattering and very unusual, let's say you spotted an alien craft up there, is there a protocol for any of this at this point or not? I mean, do you report it? How do you report it if you see something unusual?
Well, if you see something unusual, you report it to the, I think it's run by Harvard. So if you happen to discover something like a new supernova, a new asteroid, if anything unusual, you report this immediately by email. First, to make sure that you're the first person to report it and discover it. And there really isn't any other protocol except to tell other astronomers about it, so they can start looking at it and confirm what you're seeing.
Let's go to Wes in Kalkaska, Michigan. Hey, Wes, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure.
I hate to inundate you with yet another fracking question, but given the fact that the Northridge earthquake was actually amplified due to the fact it was sitting on, landfill? And stuff like that, you know, since you're fracking, wouldn't that kind of amplify a normal earthquake? You know, other than the earthquake from the fracking itself, would it amplify an existing, earthquake?
If there was going to be a quake anyway?
Right. I mean, the Northridge was really amplified because the ground it was sitting on wasn't stable.
Okay.
So I was just wondering if the fracking would have the same effect.
Okay. What's the timing of fracking?
Exactly right. In a place like Northridge or Los Angeles, because those sit not on solid rock, but loose rock, the seismic waves are amplified greatly. Now, in terms of the fracking, when you get magnitude 3 and 4 earthquakes, that shaking will certainly be more amplified. But the caller has hit on a very, very important point, and it's what's going to happen to Los Angeles when this strong shaking starts, because it has all those tall buildings. In Japan, the tall buildings are built on solid ground. Even in San Francisco, they're mostly built on solid ground, but not in Los Angeles. And there is a very vigorous debate going on between earthquake scientists and earthquake engineers as to what's going to happen with those buildings during a big earthquake.
Let's go to Scott in Duarte, California. Hi, Scotty. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question.
Sure.
I was wondering about the Owens Valley earthquake that occurred back in, I believe, the mid-1800s or somewhere in that area, where it was so powerful that, there wasn't a lot of course, communities or anything at that time, but the farms and where the cattle, they had cattle and animals like that, got thrown up in the air and broke all their legs and, all these cows died. I mean, a lot of them. I don't know exactly. I can't remember exactly how many. I learned about this in a class I took, the history of California. And it was really a devastating earthquake. It was called the Owens Valley earthquake. And I was just wondering if you have any knowledge of that one.
Well, you're right. It happened on March 26, 1872.
Oh, okay.
The largest earthquakes in California. The fatalities occurred at Lone Pine, and about 10% of the population died, and that mostly because of collapse of buildings.
Okay.
And it was a, in fact, the scarp, you're able to see it. If you're familiar with Lone Pine, you know, if you're going to climb Mount Whitney, you go up to Lone Pine and head up to the Sierras. Just on that road, you look off to the north or south, and it looks like a big pile of boulders about 20 feet high.
Uh-huh.
20 feet high. That is the fault scarp that formed in 1872.
Oh, okay.
It's very easy to see if you take that road going up to Mount Whitney.
Wow. Yeah, that, I mean, if that would have hit.
The scarp goes for about 40 miles.
If that would have hit, you know, major populated, I mean, today, you know, if that was to occur, that large earthquake in, say, L.A. or Orange County area, that would be devastating, that size of earthquake.
Oh, Scott, there's no doubt about it. It would. And, you know, as you've been saying, John, all along tonight, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. For everything, asteroids, a major earthquake, a volcano, I mean, we can't escape this, can we? We can't.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's part of living on the Earth. The Earth is dynamic, and people have made the argument the reason life is what it is in terms of us and other critters, it's because of the geologic activity. We are sort of part of the geologic activity.
We go next to Lorenzo, truck driving in Florida. Lorenzo, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I tried the first time line caller, but it was busy.
That's okay.
yes, I am originally from El Salvador. It's a small country in Central America. And my question is, recently, we have one of the volcanoes down there, which we do have a lot of volcanoes. I mean, the country is small, but we do have five volcanoes. And one of them has been active lately, right before Christmas. They start doing eruption, throwing a lot of ashes and all that. And I believe Saturday morning, this past Saturday morning, there was an earthquake down there. It didn't do damage, but it was 6.2, I believe, or 6.3. My question to him is, what does he know about Central America? He has a telescope, I believe, and he watches all that also. Because my country, we had some earthquakes before, pretty bad. I think it was 95. We had one that was pretty strong. I will take the answer on the air. Thank you.
Okay, Lorenzo, thanks. You do get a lot of big earthquakes in that area, don't they, John?
Yes, that's a place that does get large earthquakes and large eruptions. I have been to El Salvador. It was a wonderful trip. And between the jungle and the volcanic peaks, it was spectacular.
Can you predict by seismic activity today where the next big earthquake could occur? Not generally when, but where?
Not so much by current seismic activity. We look at both the increase in the strain using things like the GPS measurements, you know, using the satellites, and then also digging into the fault. And we look at past earthquakes and get an idea how often earthquakes happen and how big they are. And as I mentioned in the program, people are very much prepared for a big earthquake at Istanbul. People are preparing for large earthquakes in California and also in the Pacific Northwest of Cascadia.
So if there's a huge earthquake in California today, Southern California especially, you would not be surprised, would you?
One would not be surprised, no.
Well, geez, that's not a good thing at all. Would you tell us once again, John, where we can get your book, Earthquake Storms? You do not have a website, correct?
That's right. I do not have a website. It's, of course, available on Amazon. It's available at Barnes & Noble bookstore and website. And at least within the state of California, it can be picked up at Costco.
All right, great. Thank you so much, John. I appreciate you being on the program. I'm going to look you up when I get out to Hawaii, all right?
Oh, that's certain. And thank you for letting me be on your program. This has been a great enjoyment.
I want to get up to the Mauna Kea, but I'm going to need someone to give me an oxygen tank when I get up there, huh? You never know. John Dvorak, he runs a telescope up there at Mauna Kea. That's very close, by the way, where our Hawaiian studio is, which I will start using probably in June now that it is finished and ready to go. Don't forget our next program. It's going to be one of those classic coast-to-coast shows. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.